In 1900, only 14% of the world's population lived in a city. Today, for the first time in history, more than half the planet's population reside in urban areas. These urban centres are now racing to become the smart cities of the future. Welcome to the University of Limerick Research Impact podcast series, and I'm your host, Christine Brennan. In this recording, we will explore how the city of Limerick has received a major boost in the race to become a smart city through its designation as Ireland's first lighthouse smart city, which is part of the Positive City Exchange project. Joining me to tell us more is Rosie Webb, Senior Architect, Limerick City and County Council, and Deputy Coordinator of the Positive City Exchange project. Also with us is Professor Merit Buchholz, Founding Professor of Architecture at the University of Limerick, who is also an investigator on the project. So could I ask you first, what is a smart city?
That's a really good place to start. I mean, a smart city is... It's many things in terms of how the city functions, what the city is, what the future of the city is to become. A lot of people think about smart cities in terms of technology, and technology is a really important part of the smart city. In fact, the smart city is much more than that. It's about how we come together as communities, how we broaden our knowledge and our understanding of what the future of the city could become. It's about how politics are engaged with daily life. It's about how industry and education and the city work together. It's about, let's say, transportation. It's about mobility. It involves. Nearly every aspect of how a city functions. It's about waste management, it's about transportation, it's about water, it's about electricity, it's about all those kinds of things. But really, at the end of the day, the smart city is meant to make a great place for people to live. And I think for Limerick, this is extremely important, and this is a really exciting opportunity, because Limerick isn't traditionally known as a city where people live. It's known as many, many things, but as a place to live, I think this is an opportunity to establish something really exciting, and that's very much future focused, that puts Limerick on a global network. I mean, smart cities are something that is happening. It's a global discussion that's going on right now. And we have, through this project, the opportunity to be at the forefront of that discussion. And I think that's really exciting.
So I'll just kind of add to that. All those things are absolutely important. And really, I think part of the focus has to be around smart citizens. How do we allow digital technologies in particular, but really more organizational systems, to help us create the best places that we can? And those things are changing and we have to adjust to them. So how do these kind of new platforms, to use that word, enable us to work better together?
So Rosie, can I ask you just to elaborate more on the Positive City Exchange project? What is it and who is involved?
So the City Exchange project has two lighthouse cities, and the lighthouse cities really lead the way. The important part about this project is replication and demonstration in other places. So we're really just, you know, experimenting and trying out some new things. So there's two lighthouse cities, one in Trondheim in Norway, and then ourselves in Limerick. And then we have five cities that also follow. And then it has to be a collaboration between not just cities and city government, but also universities, also industry, so small and medium-sized industries, but then importantly, civic society, so citizens themselves. So it's a very big collaboration project, and it's enabled by funding from the European Union.
And the project itself is focused, I understand, on the Georgian quarter of Limerick City. And why has this area been chosen?
Really because we think there's a lot of potential in that area to use some of the underutilized spaces. So we think there's a lot of upper floors of the old buildings that could be used for housing in particular, getting more residential activity, increasing the diversity of the community that lives in there. But one of the real problems is with old buildings, actually just upgrading them is difficult because a lot of the regulations have moved on to really be centered around new build. So retrofitting is very difficult. So we think that this has to be done as a cooperative activity between the property owners and the city, but also between the citizens living there to make a better place. So you can do up all the old buildings, but if it's not a nice place to live, people won't want to move in there. And I suppose the last thing to say is that it's really focused around energy, but we sort of see the idea that doing up a building, whether you're doing it up to upgrade it for the mechanical, electrical systems, all of a sudden you have a great building that someone can live in. So it's the same, it's the same effort. They're intercoordinate or interlinked, I guess.
And in Ireland at the moment, I mean, housing availability and diversity of offering is a major issue. I think we're all aware of it. Will the Positive City Exchange project innovate solutions for the housing crisis? I mean, it'll bring ultimately bring new solutions on stream. But do you see that happening in the short term?
I mean, one of the things about the Georgian city, and it's interesting that, this is the kind of locus of the project, is that, you know, for years it has been a kind of, you know, seen as a lodestone, you know, this sort of thing from the past that we can't shift. And a lot of the problems that Rosie's just described with the Georgian city are about around the statutory problems in transforming a Georgian property, you know, the fire issues, the planning issues, the costs that are associated with it. But this kind of builds into a general stigma about the city that is difficult to shift. And so a lot of this work is about trying to say, well, not just the simple problems can be solved, like, you know, getting, say, a fire cert for a Georgian building, renovating it, turning it into something that can be used as a house, as a place for people to live, but also to think about what the future of the Georgian quarter as an entity can be. In other words, how do these buildings and properties and public spaces work with mobility? How do they work with education? How do they work with innovation? And what are the new systems that we need to develop, both political systems, legislative processes, community engagement processes, some of the things that you were referring to, Rosie, earlier on in this chat. How do those things need to be designed, and I use the word design here kind of particularly, to enable us to reimagine this city? And I think this is really important, that in order to get past the stigmas, it's not just about solving the legislative problems and solving the kind of bricks and mortar stuff. It's about imagining a different kind of future where all of the components of that city actually interact differently than they do right now. And the smart city is really engaged in all of that.
I mean, there's one other aspect, Christine, is the sort of exploring new investment models, and that's something that is a part of this project. So we think that, I mean, it's sort of interesting. It's, again, going back to the future, like when the Georgian city was really a really interesting speculative development model. And so people would have developed three or four properties together. And over time, that ownership became very fragmented, so that in order to then kind of bring them up to grade, whether it's putting in a lift for access or a stair at the back for fire escape, people really need to work cooperatively. So you really you need to get a number of property owners together to do up their property together, because it doesn't make sense. Like if you were to take a Georgian block, it's really only as big as an apartment block would be. And if you were building an apartment block now, you wouldn't put, you know, 50 boilers in it. You'd put one and then you'd pipe it out. You wouldn't have, you know, every single one of those people having bins going through, three bins going through their house. You'd have a collective bin store place. You might even have a place you shared cars or bikes or whatever it is. So in order to get to that place, we have to really look at the investment models, the investment system, so that we can think about cooperative development models rather than just the speculative ones that we have now. So we have an opportunity in this to experiment with some of those new type of both investment models, but also where companies can form. Like there's something called an ESCO, which is a business that forms around pushing in energy infrastructure. So whether it's solar panels, but the companies might come in and say, we'll apply for all of the grants for that. We'll bring in the builders who do that in a whole estate. And if we get 20 people together, we can do that much more efficiently, much better. So it's that kind of model now applied to kind of housing, cooperative housing development. So we're really interested in trying to experiment with those things, because there really isn't a space for that to happen now in our system.
And just to add to that, I mean, there's two really important things. One is that the that this kind of investment also is focused on developing the public realm and developing the city as a space that we share. In other words, they aren't just the buildings and the kind of, let's call it, very much private ownership model that we've been working in for the last, as long as memory goes, sort of thing. But to engage the public realm as a, not just as an amenity, because people talk about it as an amenity, but I suppose what I mean is part of their part of the daily life that they value, part of the daily life that they experience and want to be actors within. And so this means like the streets, the laneways, the park systems, the green spaces, how we move through those places, how they're how we feel safe in them, but also how we get not just enjoyment out of them, but how we become better citizens, how we become better participants in our community. Those things, I think, require a focused investment on the public realm. They aren't just things that kind of happen automatically. And I think that the bars that the local authority has set through the planning process are relatively low. In other words, the kinds of things that we're trying to achieve are relatively, you know, kind of minor. And the issues that you're talking about, solving some of the problems about waste management, for example, you know, people would like to have that problem solved, but also they'd like to have a beautiful street that they can walk onto. They'd like to have a beautiful park that they can play in. So that's one really important thing. The second thing that I wanted to add to this is that within the let's say process by which this happens, there's a very potent collaboration between the university and the city in terms of developing prototypes, models, policies, testing. That the city can't do by itself, and the university doesn't really have a laboratory that's anywhere near as powerful as the laboratory of the city. I mean, I certainly have always seen, particularly Limerick, to be this incredible urban lab. And we called, in fact, the Georgian city, we did this research project called Georgian Lab, and it's really about casting the Georgian city as the city of the future, not the past. And I think this is really a very important shift that that the partnership between the city and the university can help to bring about within people's minds, because we have to win over people's hearts and minds, not just kind of provide the tools and the investments.
And add to that, because when people think about investing in the streets and the laneways, it's not just about getting better pavements and nicer trees and, you know, nicer benches. That's a part of it, all right. But there's a whole process where people have to become a part of that design. So the investment has to be in the designers, the people who allow people to become a part of that decision making, really about values about their public space. So, for instance, you know, how just is it that, you know, 50% of our space is taken up by cars, if not more? You know, those are the kind of questions we want to be asking, not just do you like this pavement or, you know, should the car go here or there? We're talking about real questions that people can become invested in. And what we know is whenever we do these type of things, there is no end to the appetite of people wanting to be invested in their public spaces. So really what this is allowing us, and I think what also the university can bring to the table, is because, you know, it's a huge amount of human capital and passion that has to be invested into this. And I think it's a very good pairing with the university, because I have a foot in both camps. So I teach, but I'm also a public servant, a public service designer. And I have to tell you that going out to a public consultation is very different with those two different hats on. So I find that the fact that the university is seen as someone who's just interested in promoting knowledge and assisting in the buildup of knowledge, and people can take that process of imagining just at that. This is possible things that could happen. And that can happen in a public discourse when the university is involved in that much easier than if you go out as a person who's representing the government. It's very immediately, no matter what you say, you know, there people see a tree put in there, a different one, they immediately can focus on very specific things. So the discussion never gets beyond, you know, 10 years ago I had a pothole you never fixed. So it really helps that discussion to become much more open, and that process is accepted in that way. And then I think also, having been on the other foot, whereas working in the university, and you go out and do these type of things, and then people say, that's really great, but let's do it now. And you can't, because that's not your decision, and it's very hard to integrate that work into what local authorities do. So I think this, you know, what we expect our government to do versus what we expect the university to do, and how they have to collaborate, or there's a meaningful collaboration that actually yields something better for both parties.
Merit, can you elaborate on how this project will actually help us tackle climate change?
Well, I think this is a really interesting question, because, you know, at the moment we're faced with you know, let's say so many issues that are impacting on climate change. You know, where does one start? And we also have a new generation who are, you know, programmed differently, who have different desires about the future, who expect more from the things that we have. And when you think about the city, and in particular Limerick City, most of it exists. You know, the Georgian center is fully built out, so to speak. It's been changed and it's been modified, but as a system, it exists, and it caters for everything that we need. You know, it has energy, it has mobility, it has it creates public spaces that are fantastic. So, as a one of the issues, I suppose, is the past and how we think about the city as, you know, some kind of a relic, some kind of a something that we should leave behind, and that the future is actually something else. And in facing climate change with this project, one of the huge opportunities is to reinvent how people think about the future of the past, of the things of the past. I think that young people have big expectations about what the city can deliver for them. They don't want to live in a semi-D, you know, out in a field somewhere, you know, 10, 15, 25, 30 kilometers away from the center. They want to be in town, but they don't just want to be in town in some kind of a ruin, you know, on a street that's just full of cars. They want to be in a vibrant place where their kids can use the streets, where they can meet their neighbors, where they're part of a community that's active and engaged in the way that, I suppose, you know, in historically we talk about small towns. You know, cities are no more than just kind of conurbations of small towns, you know, brought together. And I think that getting past the kind of iconic nature of Limerick City in particular is a big challenge. And I don't think that we need to, particularly when we're talking about you know, young people and the future, we don't need to think about these buildings in terms of some kind of previous associations with the past. We can reinvent them. So, without going into the discourse around, you know, densification and how it's generally better to live in denser communities.
I'll go into that.
Good, yeah,
I think
that.
It's the key, right? It's like, it's about how you use resources more efficiently, right? And so compact urban planning. How do we get more people sharing the same kind of space in a way that works? And the ironic thing is that our best models for that were built, you know, in the 18th century, the 17th century. They're still the best models. And we're kind of going back to that in terms of how do we actually make that happen again. And I think it's also in terms of resiliency. When you think of climate change, it's about resiliency. So even if you think just abstractly about a hierarchical model where the guy at the top, you can take him out. You know, if you were in war, you'd go in there and you take that guy out at the top. When you have a grid or something that's dispersed, if one bit of it goes out, the others take up. So it's a totally different way of thinking about the world. And that compact urban planning, that sort of grid system where you have a bunch of people working even at a block level, that just works in terms of the way it's organized as being a resilient system. So reinventing, you looking at the past of how we've always done this very well, in some ways we kind of came away from that. You know, and I think you see that a lot in the 60s of this idea that we need to build a new site somewhere. And what we thought, you know, that was really too driven by one person. That this idea of this master planning, there's one guy who's going to deliver the future with his fantastic plan, and all we have to do is get from here to there, get everybody out of our way, don't let anyone get us. Whereas much more now we're talking about like a model where you're developing lots of different possible solutions. You don't have to do them in advance because you can't predict the future. You have to let it become, and you have to have people be a part of that becoming that thing. It's not a thing that you start with a beginning and an end. It's a constant process that's evolving.
I mean, and the Georgian grid is an incredible invention for the future. I mean, people Absolutely. Think about the city as this 300-year-old. No, this is something that is as relevant and as potential filled now as it was back then. And I think that is, I mean, in a way, I keep coming back to that point because there are so few grid cities in Ireland, you know, there just aren't that many. And just to see that as a fundamental instrument, as a as a technological tool, because this piece of technology that's still very resilient,
it's
still
a logical
very robust,
system,
and
I think,
needs to be. It is our best tool against climate change in Limerick.
Yeah.
It is not to build a 300-millimeter flood wall along the estuary or whatever the OPW is planning. That actually, we have these tools right now. We simply have to figure out again how to use them. Mm-hmm. You know, this is I think what it boils down to in Limerick.
I think also that it can never be done through one stream, if you know what I mean. So it's not just about solving the problem with mobility. It's not just about the fact that it's flooding. You always have to think of any instrument, any piece of infrastructure you put in, as doing a lot of things at the same time, and understanding that it does those things so that you can design it or plan for it. So it's that, you know, this way of being much more holistic about the way that we tackle problems now.
I think it's a really exciting combination there of that vision and cultural change and new models of collaboration. I think this project could enable Limerick to do something quite different and quite unique. Can I ask you on the sustainable energy piece of it? It talks about generating a new sustainable energy market within the urban environment itself. Could you just elaborate a bit on that?
I mean, on one hand, it's relatively straightforward. This is technology that exists. It's not actually new technology. So it's about the accessibility of that technology. So I'm talking about smart meters and photovoltaic cells and things that I suppose, you know, within the kind of building industry, one is becoming increasingly familiar with. The other piece of this is the regulatory issue. So the ESB, for example, is a partner in this project. So how energy is traded and managed and creating new markets for trading electricity from person to person within the community is one of the kind of key objectives of creating a framework for that to happen is one of the key objectives of the project. There are a lot of technology people on the team, you know, technology companies on the team that are already trading in this kind of already doing this kind of work, basically. But the missing pieces is almost never the technology. Technology is always kind of inventing new stuff to use, right? And it's the ability of us to apply it correctly, but also the ability of us to really get a value out of it as a community, not as some sort of technological thing for its own, you know, benefit and its own development. And so, you know, the project is really interesting because it has technology partners, and of course most of them are interested, you know, they're businesses and they're interested in, you know, protecting their intellectual property and selling more gadgets, whatever they are. What we're interested in is in fact how the community uses them to create a better community. And in fact, there are limits to which technology can be applied. There will be. I mean, this is kind of going to be an inevitable part of the framework. It's one of the most powerful aspects, I think, of the university city industry collaboration that this in fact is, that there are kind of checks and balances. You know, there's promises that are made that by technology that inevitably can't be delivered upon because of certain, you know, regulatory or planning issues, whatever they are, that we aim to dislodge. And I think that's really important. We'd have to probably bring in one of the software guys to tell us about how the blockchain is going to work, because I couldn't really tell you, but...
Okay, before we get to blockchain, that could be a whole other podcast.
That's another day.
Well, really, the energy market is changing from a thing where there was one provider and you buy your energy from that provider, you know, and in Limerick, we have Ard na Cruiseadh. So we, you know, that was a very powerful statement that was put in the 30s of electrifying the whole nation. And it was really through, you know, 99% of our energy came from there at one time. But it's changing now. Now, our buildings are going to be so efficient that every single one of us is going to have extra energy just by turning on our radio, our toaster. So what do you do with that extra energy? You know, we want to be able to use that. Some of it can go into storage, and maybe some of the storage could even be things like your car. But really, it's going to be around how do we trade it with our neighbor. So if we're using it in the day and somebody else is using it in the evening, how can we form a relationship where we trade with them? How do we trade as a whole little group? So the whole idea of this bid is that you form a little community energy company. So that group of people can then either take energy off the grid so that you can bring more renewables on. I mean, we actually have more renewables than we can use now, because they happen at a time when we might not need that energy, or in a way that we can't ensure it's variable, so we can't ensure the quality of it. But we can also take energy, we cannot use energy that allows more renewables to come on. So as a group, how can you either take your excess energy and give it back to the grid or take it off so that more renewables can come on? So it's a completely different model, which you can see is never going to happen unless you know what other people are doing, unless there's some platform. And in this case, it'll be a digital model where we can measure how much people will be contributing information about how much energy we're using. We can see where, when. We can do scenario testing, say, well, if you turned off your refrigerator for 2 hours in the evening and you're not opening it up, then we'll give you a coupon for that energy usage, right? And you can just do that by your app because you have a smart your refrigerator is connected to this platform, which allows you to, through your phone, just turn it off and somebody sends you a notice. You know, if you just turn it off for, you know, during the time that you're sleeping, you'll get a coupon. Now, the coupon, we might not want to spend our coupon on energy. We might want it for, you know, babysitting services, or we might want it for, you know, a free pizza at our, you know, our, so the, I don't know the technical aspects of how the blockchain stuff works, but really it's about new trading platforms, how you can get value out of saving. So it's an exchange platform.
And those things are, you know, it's hard to understate the power of that, you know, new exchange platform within, particularly within a community like Limerick. I mean, this is obviously something that would very well work in an established community. In other words, there's not a huge amount of work to do. You know, you give people a new technology, they adopt it, a new way of trading things, they start to adopt it. But in a place where there's lots of issues, lots of problems that need to be solved, it becomes a very potent problem-solving tool.
But also a lot of social capital, you know.
Yeah.
Limerick has an amazing group of people who love their city center. You know, the worst thing is, I never get upset when people come out and they're angry with us, or they're very passionate about it. The worst thing is when you go into community and there's no one coming out. No one cares. So the difference between going in a place that has these generations of history and generations of families and generation and pride to starting a whole new greenfield site development, like, that's hard. That's like creating a whole new community. You know, that's really difficult. So when you already have this social capital that you can build on, you know, people want to get involved, and they want to share. That no one says that's easy. It's possibly the most important, you know, difficult thing you can do. But the fact that you have this asset there already that you can build on,
I think that's a lovely point that you make about it. It is the history that's already there and the energy that's already there from.
Yeah.
The citizens that are going to drive this and make it successful. If listeners are interested in finding out more, Rosie, where would we direct them?
Limerick.ie. That's our platform where everything is, so you'll be able to find all the information there.
Great. Thanks for joining me today. You've been listening to Professor Merit Buchholz from the School of Architecture at UL, Rosie Webb from Limerick City and County Council. The Positive City Exchange Project is funded by the European Commission and led by Limerick City and County Council and involves researchers at the University of Limerick and LIRO. If you'd like to find out more about research impact at UL, go to our website, ul.ie/researchimpact.